They did it, and they're back home in Maine. Dan and Danny are here to share their experience of hiking the AT, the Appalachian Trail. We first met Danny Moody of Winthrop and Dan Jaguar of Manchester last spring, March 30th to be exact, as they were preparing to set out on the adventure of a lifetime, hiking the Appalachian Trail. Maybe in the 6 months since then, you have been following their journey on the Maine Public app or webpage. Well, today, we get to check in with them in person. We'll find out what the experience was like and what they got out of it. Will they live life differently now? We've also invited Tony Barrett from the Maine Appalachian Trail Club to discuss the trail here in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we relive the AT. And we're live on Facebook, too. That's next, but first this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Appalachian Trail is more than 2,000 miles long and snakes through 14 states. Each year, millions of visitors hike a portion of the AT, as it's known, but not many hike the trail from beginning to end. Well, today we welcome back Danny Moody and Dan Jaguar to the show. They recently completed their through hike of the Appalachian Trail. And Tony Barrett is also with us. He currently serves on the executive committee of the Maine Appalachian Trail Club, and he helps maintain the trail. So as always, we want to hear from you. Have you thought of hiking the AT? Have you done it? Do you have questions for Dan and Danny? Did you follow their trek on our app or our website? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, both of you. Dan, I'll start with you. Was it what you expected?
It definitely was a lot of what I expected, but definitely a lot more challenging and just really having to focus on the few days ahead of you, not the whole long-term thing.
Uh-huh. At what point did that occur to you that I need to just focus on the few days ahead of me?
Probably pretty early on that I realized I couldn't keep thinking about the end. I had to keep focused on just the few days ahead of me because it's so long. You're out there for so long. That's what the real challenge is just day after day having to get up and go hiking and keep making miles.
Sure. I looked to see when we did the program before March 30th, more than 6 months ago. So how many days? Each of you was on the trail a little bit different. You were on the trail how long?
I took 4 months and 20 days to do the trail. So we both started April 15th, and then I started, finished September 5th.
Okay. What about you, Danny? How long were you on the trail?
I think it was 5 months, 5 days.
That's a long time.
Yep.
I'll ask you the same question. Was it what you expected?
I guess it kind of transitioned. Like, it started, and when you were thinking about how the trail was, you were thinking, like, am I going to be able to physically do it? And because you're like, it's fresh. So mentally, you're good. And then as you kind of go along and you're getting in shape towards the end of the trail, you're like, all right, I know my body can do it. Now it's just kind of getting yourself up and getting up over the mountain because some of the days were pretty tough. So it'd just be getting yourself going, really.
I was rereading some of your blogs, and I saw that both of you had moments where you sort of fell out of love with hiking, but you didn't quit.
Yeah, for sure. I had a lot of like foot troubles, like just finding the right shoes to fit my feet. So I had a lot of foot pain, and that was really bothering me for almost the first half of the trip. So that was really pushing me to like almost want to quit, but I just couldn't do it after committing to it and knowing Moody was still out there. I couldn't let him get farther than me, so I had to keep going.
What about you, Danny? How did you keep yourself going?
You just kind of do it. I mean, it was really the toughest once it started getting hot. And I was without Daisy, so that was pretty tough. I had called my mom one time when I was sitting in Pennsylvania. I was just like, what am I doing? Like, it's hot. It's raining. Like, my body hurts. And just kind of talk to her for a little bit. And, you know, she's like, just stick it out. It'll be all right. But I think that the thing that kind of brought me through it the most would definitely be, like, my trail family. You know what I mean? If you're out there doing it alone, that's a lot harder. So at least you had something to, like, look forward to at the end of the day. If you weren't hiking with them during the day, you could all kind of get together at camp.
So how many people were in your respective trail families? Is this sort of like, you know, you start with a group and then you end up with few weeks with one group, a few weeks with another group. Is that how it works?
It definitely like moves along. Like you get with different groups of people. I mean, you really do know like everyone within a few days span of like hiking days span of where you are. So you kind of move around. We both started out with the same group. until about the halfway point. And then I started wanted to do more miles and found another group of about four people. And that's who I pretty much finished the whole second half of the trail with.
Okay. And what about you, Danny? How many people were in your sort of core?
So right at the halfway when he broke off, we had probably 12 people, I think, that we hiked with for all the way till Massachusetts. And then I think like four of us broke off from that group just kind of to pick up the pace. That's just kind of how it goes out there. And then we met up with two other people. So we had a group of like six or seven that I ended up finishing with.
And you set off with your dog, Daisy. You knew there were stretches she wouldn't be able to do because of the laws in those states.
Yep.
But tell us about Daisy. She made it halfway, right?
She made it 1,100 miles. So she made it to Pine Grove Furnace, which is where the half-gallon challenge is. My mom was actually already coming down to see me just to kind of visit. And I just saw it as an opportunity to kind of get her off the trail. Not that I had to, but I knew it was going to get hot. It was going to get rocky. She was kind of starting to lose some weight, which is as expected. You know what I mean? She's carrying her own weight, and we're walking 20-plus miles a day. So instead of having to call my mom and go, you know, I think it's time for her to come down, I just took the free ride and sent her back up. And it's easier on me in the end, too.
So how was the reunion when she saw you again?
Oh, she flipped out. If she flipped out, yeah. She was it's actually like she reacts so much different when we're somewhere else. Like, she freaks out that she sees me, but she's super interested in, like if she's in a new place. But if I, like, come home after not seeing her for a long time, that's when you get, like, the most reaction out of her.
All right. Well, Tony, I want to bring you into the conversation. Tony Barrett is with the Maine Appalachian Trail Club, the executive committee member, and you're a trail maintenance person and, you know, just really intimately involved in the trail. When you listen to Dan and Danny's stories, Tony, is this sort of, I don't want to say typical, but are these the stories you hear?
We do, and you guys did a great job. I mean, the average through hike is about 5.5 months, so both of you came under that.
Wow.
And when we're out maintaining sections of trail, we see both day hikers and through hikers, so we enjoy encountering and talking to hikers about their experiences.
All right. How many people made it? Well, I guess the season's not over, right? I mean, it's still sunny and warm outside, but so far, do we know how many through hikers have made it to Katahdin?
You know, we don't know exactly because there's a self-nominating system that people turn their completed hike records into the ATC. But last year, it was about 1,200 to 1,300 through hikers. We do measure, or there's a register in Georgia where people sign in. You probably both signed in down in Georgia, but that doesn't capture everyone. But that is, from year to year, we can judge if it's up or down. So it was up 11% from last year, and last year was a record year. So
wow.
We're expecting that it'll be 10 to 15% more than last year.
All right. What is the magic of it? I'm going to ask you guys too, but Tony, what is the... Why? Why are we up 11% from year over year? How come more and more people want to do it?
People seeking solitude, getting back to nature, the camaraderie of being out on the trail. The challenge of doing a trail, I think, has a lot. And that was kind of the motivation for my walk.
Okay. So, Danny, was that the motivation for you, the challenge? I'm trying to remember what you told me back in March.
I guess it kind of was. I mean, it was really like I didn't really have a specific reason. Like, I wasn't lost in life and like needing to find myself, and I read about the Appalachian Trail. I was young, I didn't have a lot to worry about. I figured if I was going to do it, now would be a good time. So that was kind of what motivated me, is just right time, right place. I was in a good place in my life where I could do it, and I had Daisy, who was, you know, able, and my mom to support me and my dad to support me. So it was just the right time, I guess.
Okay, what about you, Dan? Do you remember why you did it?
Definitely along the same lines. I think it was the perfect opportunity for me to do it. Moody was going along as someone to go with. I felt like I could do it physically. I didn't have any responsibilities holding me back. And once I got out there, it definitely was part of the challenge of finishing, but I think it was more just the experience. And once you get out there, the social aspect of like meeting all these people, and everyone is so nice and so friendly and so talkative, like no one's judging you, or just everyone's so open. It's just a great experience.
So I have to ask if you met any characters along the way.
Every day. Single day. They just kind of, I mean, you meet all types of people, some crazy, some not crazy. I mean, when you come across them at first, you are like nervous because you're fresh on the trail. Like, oh man, I don't know about these people out here. But then like towards the end, they just kind of exist around you. You just kind of keep, you know what I mean? Your day just keeps on rolling whether they are there or not. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, along what he said, it's definitely just it's another person on the trail, and you just treat them as everyone else. You say hey to them, talk to them. If you actually were really bothered by them, it's pretty much you just hike away from them, because normally if they're kind of crazy or something, they're not exactly putting in a huge miles or anything.
So I have to say that when I interviewed you guys in the spring, you were both very clean cut. You both now have some facial hair. In fact, Danny, on your Field Report 27, if someone wants to go to our blog, you posted 5 different photos of
you. Yeah, I did one a month.
Change in your look. One a month?
Yeah, I did one. I forgot to do like my day one, but I got like my first month through my last month.
So even though I'm not going to go to many emails yet, I'm going to go to this email from somebody named Dan, ironically. Did you both hike the entire trail without shaving, and how was the itch factor is the question.
Definitely went the whole trail without shaving. That's definitely like a huge aspect of it, especially for the guys. Like you go out there and you don't want to cut your hair and you don't want to shave your beard. It's supposed to be growing it out. It didn't really bother me itching. I guess chafing, though, is a big problem on the trail. I would say that's something that everyone really struggles with, is figuring out a way to combat the chafing.
Yeah, you got a lot of tips back in March about that. What about you, Danny? How was the itch factor?
I really didn't have that much of a problem. I'd say like the first month or two when you're starting to get used to it, but then like it just totally becomes just like a part of your face. And that was the first time I had ever grown facial hair, so I didn't really know what was going to come out. So it was interesting.
Tony, did you do that back when you did the trail? Did you not cut your hair, not shave?
You don't have an opportunity really to shave, so everyone grows a beard if you're male.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. When you listened to them, what year did you hike the trail through hike it?
1998.
So when you listen to them, does that make you want to head back out?
I go out multiple times now in Maine. I mean, that's the beauty of maintaining a section of trail. I go out on the AT, you know, 5 or 6 times a year just to maintain, so.
Okay, Dan and Danny, the main section of the AT is what Tony takes care of. How does Maine compare to the rest of the states?
I'd definitely say Maine is, like, one of the more enjoyable states, and the trails are amazing, and there actually was a bunch of brand-new privies that were built this year that privies become, like, one of the running jokes of, like, you almost rate all the privies when you go to them between everybody, and it's kind of one of the things everyone talks about while you're on the trail. Maine's definitely one of the more challenging areas, but one of the more rewarding and enjoying sections of the trail.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Southern Maine, like crossing that border into Maine, is some of probably the toughest trail. I mean, we would go and we would check to see how far we've gone, and it's like a fraction of what we mostly cover, you know what I mean? In that amount of time, we're like, holy crap, like this trail's really slowing us down. But at the same time, the scenery around you kind of keeps your mind active, so it's not as bad.
Okay. So was this a big project, Tony, updating the privies?
Well, we have 42 campgrounds, 10 sites.
And in Maine?
In Maine, along the trail. And for your listeners, the typical privy in Maine that used to be looked like a porta potty. You know, it's 3 feet by 3 feet, and it was literally over a pit. And because of our thin soils, and after 50 years, we couldn't find places dig new pits, and it was an anaerobic process and wasn't very healthy. So we have moved to a new design that was developed by AMC, the Green Mountain Club, and the Maine crew, called a moldering privy. And we also have made these privies accessible. So they're made with ramps, and so of the 42, we've now have built 9 of these. The last one that we built, we built 2 this year. The last one was a mile from the peak of Whitecap, very remote place in the 100-mile wilderness. And it took 750 hours, mostly just hauling the materials up to build this. And as Dan mentioned, they're large. You could sleep about 4 people inside one of these. And they have a little porch, and they have a ramp so that they are accessible. But they're impressive structures for being out in such remote areas.
Wow, 750 hours. So you'll have to share a photograph with us so we can post it on our Facebook page. And you said you've done 42 planned, so this is a multi-year project.
Oh, yeah. It's all done by volunteers. And most of the time you feel like a mule carrying the materials up. But
Danny, what was your trail name?
My trail name was Bubba.
Why?
So Lieutenant got his trail name first. So it was kind of a play on with the Forrest Gump.
So Lieutenant is Dan?
Yep, Lieutenant is Dan.
Lieutenant Dan after LT. Like Bubba Gump.
Yep, so he got his trail name first, and then I had a call from my dad, and I was talking to my dad, and it was on speakerphone, and his nickname for me, like, my entire life has been Bubba. So he called me Bubba, like, on the phone, and someone just was like, that's too perfect. Like, you should keep that as your trail name. I said, that's easy enough for me. Like, I'm already used to being called it, so it didn't take any time to get used to it. So that's kind of where it came from.
Okay, and what did you say, Dan? You're a lieutenant because of Forrest Gump?
I was Lieutenant Dan, Forrest Gump. I guess I don't really have a big story to it. Right off at the start of the trail, everyone's just kind of throwing out trail names because it's like the fun thing to do. And of course, I started with another Dan, so they just had to distinguish one of us. And I didn't want to get something worse, so I went with Lieutenant Dan. And I got a lot of laughs through the trail, so I enjoyed it.
Tony, what was your trail name when you did the hike?
I didn't take on a trail name.
Is that allowed?
Well, people just started calling me Only Tony because I thought trail names were kind of silly. And
so it became Only Tony?
It became Only Tony, yeah.
So you kind of did have one.
I was, yeah, given one.
You know, let's ask you guys sort of the serious question. Dan, do you feel like the experience changed you? Are you a different person?
I wouldn't say I'm like a fully different person. You definitely gain a new perspective on life and what's really necessary and what you can achieve and just being able to do what you did is like, I don't know, it's hard to explain really, but you feel accomplished in a greater sense.
The rest of your life you can say, I did that.
Yes,
I did that amazing
thing. Just knowing you were able to like push yourself every day to new things that you never thought were possible. Like it gives you a new perspective on what you can do.
What about you, Danny? You feel different?
I wouldn't say I feel different. I definitely see myself not needing as much stuff because you just, you know what I mean, you go so long without it. You just don't need it anymore. But I would say the biggest difference would just be the little things in life that you don't realize are really nice, like a trash can or just like a toilet or just like a roof over your head when it starts to rain, not being caught in the, anybody that knows me knows I absolutely hate the rain. So just being able to like get away from the rain and stuff like that. It's just the small things in the real world that you kind of, I guess, take for granted.
All right. Well, we are talking with Dan and Danny as well as Tony Barrett from the Maine Appalachian Trail Club. Call us and share either your stories or hiking or pose some questions to our team here. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Richard Parks Furniture, Ellsworth. Displaying 11 models of Norwegian recliners and relaxers. Details at richardparks.com.
You may have heard Shankar Vedantam's Hidden Brain segments on Morning Edition or the How I Built This interview excerpts with TED host Guy Raz. Well, both are blossoming into new, full-fledged radio programs, and we're happy to be among the first stations to make room for them in our Maine Public Radio schedule. They start this coming weekend, along with Planet Money and Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org, click on radio, and new weekend schedule. Thank you.
Politicians from both parties have offered their sympathy for the victims of Las Vegas.
Our collective hearts, so hardened now by the absurd frequency of these mass shootings, are broken once again.
We will all be praying for them and hoping they can recover from these grievous wounds.
Now President Trump visits Las Vegas this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Hiking the Appalachian Trail. With me in the studio, Dan Jaguar and Danny Moody. They recently completed a through hike of the AT. Tony Barrett's also with us. He's on the executive committee of the Maine Appalachian Trail Club. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief, please brief, email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start, well, we did one email already, but I'll start this section with an email from Amber. Full disclosure, I hiked with the guys. You'd get some good stories out of them if you want to ask them these. Number one, Who was the hardest loss on trail, and why was it a watermelon?
Melanie.
There's a thing called Trail Days, which is down south in Damascus, Virginia, where everyone gets together to kind of, so the whole trail community. And we had a watermelon, and we put sunglasses and a hat on it, and it became kind of like our group
mascot
for the time there. And then actually we went over to a fire, and one of the opposing groups, like, it smashed it on the ground. We kind of had like a little funeral for it. So she became like one of the group, and it was just an ongoing joke we had through the trail.
Okay, you can answer this one, Danny. What exactly does it mean to get the dogs barking?
Get the dogs barking came from someone I hiked with named Island Time, got these like knockoff Crocs that were called the dogs. And whenever we would go out dancing, he would wear these Crocs, well, these dogs, and he would get his feet going. And so we called that getting the dogs barking.
And then it became like, as people would roll into camp at night, you'd give a couple barks. It would be like, get the dogs barking.
Yeah, we
and
all
they'd come in.
This is someone from our trail family that's is sending these questions in.
I like it. Anybody else who hiked with these guys, feel free to ask questions. I'll take them. We're going to go to Talker Man calling from Cherryfield. Hi, Talker Man. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Hey, great to hear AT story. I got started backpacking when I was a scout in the 50s, and I waited 50 years to hike the AT, and when I hiked it in 07, I'm pretty sure I was the oldest finisher. But what was remarkable is, from the very beginning to the end of the trail, how much scouting played on that trail. The founders of that trail were Eagle Scouts. I started the very first night and collected a couple of Eagle Scout signatures on a little flag I was carrying. And by the time I reached Katahdin, I had over 150 unsolicited Eagle Scout signatures of through hikers. It was pretty remarkable.
That's
neat. The other thing is that because I am part of Katahdin Area Council and I had my Katahdin patch on my pack, everybody was intrigued by this Katahdin patch that I had, I'm just going home. And it was an amazing experience for me, and I love to hear hiker stories.
Talkerman, how old were you when you finished in 2007?
69.
Excellent. So are the three of you Eagle Scouts?
I'm not an Eagle Scout. I stopped at life, but I think Boy Scouts definitely built the foundation on what I knew what I was doing out there and just my knowledge of the outdoors.
Probably the person most primarily responsible for the trails, Myron Avery from Lubeck, Maine, an Eagle Scout. Spent most of his career down in Washington in D.C., but was really key for completing the trail in 1934 and is buried back in Lubeck.
Mm. If someone is thinking about doing the trail and was not a scout, are there classes? Are there ways to prepare?
I would say the best way to prepare just to be go out and get hiking, start getting some gear, just get used to being out there camping. If you're from Maine, you really have access to some of the best parts of the trail right here in Maine that you can go out and do any number of days that you wish to challenge yourself. And of course, Moody, I don't think, had any involvement in the Boy Scouts, and he was still able to complete the trail and have just as well of time as I did.
And the Appalachian Mountain Club here in the Maine chapter offers backpacking classes, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask about. Now, I want to talk about something. Before I came on the program, I wanted to make sure, even though I've been a reporter in Maine for a long, long time, that I was saying Appalachian right. Some people think it's Appalachian. You say Appalachian. Are there several correct pronunciations? Tony, tell us how to say this correctly.
There's no correct, but the two are Appalachian and Appalachian. So it's a regional preference.
Okay. And what did you guys hear on the trail?
Well, in my group, we called it the Achalachin. And that was, we would just say that around people that wouldn't know. Just kind of messing with people that don't understand. But that was just in our group.
Yeah, it's definitely, like Tony said, a regional thing. I think down south, it seemed like they said Appalachian a lot more. And then as we got made towards Maine, it became more Appalachian. I think it really is just how you heard it or how you heard it growing up or read it. And that's how you'd say it.
I have a tweet from John. Question for both Dan and Danny. The most useful piece of gear you bought. Also, the first thing you tossed from your pack.
Boy, right off, I tossed a bunch of stuff. I mean, no matter how light you try to go at the start, you realize all kinds of things you don't want. Hard to say what the most useful item, I guess.
Sit pad's the most useful item.
Yeah, or just a good sleeping pad, because sleeping well at night is one of the main things. And if you don't have a comfortable sleeping pad.
Or camp shoes. Or a sit pad. A sit pad's just like a little tiny pad that whenever you're sitting on a log, you could slip it under just to kind of make it just a little bit better. So I would say that's definitely a game changer. And the first thing I got rid of was I had this obnoxious bottle of fish oil that I thought I was going to take. And probably day two, I was like, nope, I'm not carrying this anymore. And I sent that home.
What about you, Tony? Our tweeter didn't want to ask you, but I want to know from you. What did you get rid of when you hiked the trail?
I got rid of my tent and replaced it with a tarp.
Oh, yeah. So no metal rods to deal with.
You use your hiking poles to hold up your tarp.
Wow. You're braver than I am. We're going to go to Kristen calling. Let's see if I can get to her. There we go. Kristen and Gorham. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Great to hear your stories, you guys. I went out as a single female hiking in 2008, and I love hearing stories of people going together, and I'm always intrigued as to how your relationship developed, and if you were, you know, not caring for each other at any point during the trail, or if you, like, hiked together the entire time, or if you took some time apart from each other.
It was definitely great to, like, start off with Danny, kind of gave you someone you knew you could lean on. But as we got going, really just made our own friends out there, and we both planned not really to stay together, actually. I think we probably hiked the first 300 miles about together, and then we kind of really split up. And then at the halfway point, I don't think I saw Moody until the very end. It's not that we didn't care for each other or try to keep in touch. We just got on different paces and had different mindsets about how we wanted to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We're both very, like, independent type people, you know what I mean? Not the type to, like, need someone else there. So we just kind of were going with the flow, and we'd run into each other in random spots, and we might link up for a day or two and then split up and then kind of come back. So we did that all the way until, like, the halfway mark. And then he went to D.C. with the group, and that's where we really kind of, like, fell apart. And then in Pennsylvania is where he took off, and then I didn't see him until the end. So it was kind of like an on-and-off thing. But there's not like you're texting each other. It's not really a thing out there. So it's just kind of at random.
Okay. Kristen, good question. Thanks for asking it. We're going to, let's see, go to Leah, who sent an email. Number one, crowding on the trail. Were some areas more crowded than others? Did it change your perception of the trail from solitude driven to a more social aspect?
I definitely would say it was a lot more social than I was expecting. You saw groups of people every day, and especially when I started pushing more miles, I saw new faces every day that I hadn't seen before. The only time you'd really have crowding issues is if something got held you up. Like when we were coming through the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, about halfway through you get off to go down into Gatlinburg, and we had a snowstorm and you weren't able to get back up the road for 3 days. So when everyone did get back on trail, there was almost like 50 people in one of the shelters, and it's like a 14-man shelter. So you had a lot of problems with crowding then. But most of the time, everyone was able to spread apart, and there was enough campsites that you never had any trouble.
And the snowstorm was in April?
Towards April. The end of April.
April was a snowstorm, and then the next day was a windstorm. It was like 2 days that it was shut down.
Yeah, the Smokies were like 5,000 to 6,000 feet tall, so it was like the snow was up there, not on the lower levels. But
Deanne, can I just follow up on that? Did you find that you were able to find enough solitude?
Yeah, you definitely, like, especially during the day when you're hiking, you can really find your own time to be alone. And if you really wanted to camp on your own, it'd just be about finding a spot that's maybe like one or two tent sites and setting up. If you were really looking for a lot more solitude, the best way to do that would be to head southbound on the trail. You're just going to run into a lot less people and be a lot more on your own.
You pass people.
Yeah, you'll be heading the opposite direction, but camping with people and, like, timing-wise, you're just going to find less people and more solitude if that's what you're looking for.
Well,
the
disadvantage and the reason people aren't doing that, though, is because you're going into the South during summer instead of leaving the South during summer, right? I mean, you were talking, Danny, about the heat.
Mm.
You weren't hiking in Georgia and Tennessee in August.
No, we were in, like, Virginia, Pennsylvania. Oh, in August, we'd be up in towards New England.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of the nice. It was, like, the day we stepped into Connecticut, like, I swear, the breeze was cooler, and I was telling my group, and they're like, you just think that because we're in New England. I'm like, no, I'm telling you, the breeze is cooler, the days are nicer, like we're back in New England.
Tony, I'll let you take this one. It's from Leah, and maybe the guys have a thought here. How do you feel about new permitting system in Baxter State Park that limits AT hikers per year? Can you tell us about that, more about that?
It came to a head with Scott Jurek 3 years ago, who made a kind of a scene on top of Katahdin.
And that's the runner who...
And it was the runner...
Who set a record,
who
right?
set a record. Yeah. And just as an aside, a new record was set this year by an unsupported hiker, unlike Scott. His trail name was Stringbean.
I actually met him in the 100-mile wilderness. He stopped real quick and actually took a picture with us and everything. He was really humble, nice guy.
So he went running by you in the 100-mile wilderness.
Was he after knots?
Yeah, we were at like a water section, and he just stopped real quick. And he was actually the second guy. There was a guy earlier in the year that set the unsupported record, and then this guy, his
beat
name
that.
Was Knots, and then this guy, Stringbean, came around.
Nice.
Came along
a string
and
beat
runner.
Okay, go
That was amazing he stopped, because his last 106 miles was done nonstop, 36 hours.
He was at about 90 miles at that point, and he was like, I got 46 miles to do today, 20 tonight, and the rest to do tomorrow, like nonstop. And then we found out he made it, so it's pretty crazy.
Huh. Anyway, going back to the new rules.
So the permits were set, a permit limit was set for, I think, 3,100 permits this year. And as of September 26th, there was 2,700 permits issued. So we haven't come up against a cap yet. But what the park has said is we're gonna put a limit on the number of hikers that enter on foot through the Appalachian Trail. And once that cap is met, hikers will just have to go like everyone else, enter through Togue Pond Gate. So it hasn't been an issue. It doesn't look like it'll be an issue this year.
It definitely, as you were heading up the trail, the conversation, because of the brand new rules, it sounded like it was going to be an issue. But as you got near the end, you realized the number is way too, like, it's way more people than are going to be there. And you shouldn't have any problem getting your spot. If not, you can always find another way to go in like a normal person, like everyone else, or it really caused no issues.
All right. We'll go to Leslie, who's calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. First of all, congratulations on your through hike. I'm not a through hiker, but I made it my first retirement goal to make it to Baxter Peak. And September of the year, I turned 65. I did do that on my second attempt, and it's just quite an amazing mountain. The point I wanted to make was just how important it is to be prepared. On both of my hikes at Katahdin, I met a lot of interesting people, but several people that really were unprepared and were a danger to themselves on the trail.
Leslie, when you say unprepared, what did you see? Did you see people without enough water, with improper shoes? What was sort of the most common mistake?
Physically, probably not prepared. Either, you know, overweight and not in shape, hadn't done much hiking. You know, they just read about Katahdin. They said, oh, we'll do a day hike. You know, we're in Maine. We'll do a day hike up Katahdin. But Katahdin is what shocked me most about the mountain, and what's so beautiful about the mountain is that it's a humongous hunk of rock. And what passes for trails on Katahdin to most people would be running rocky stream beds in the early spring, I think. What most people think of as a trail is maybe like the first 100 yards on Katahdin. After that, you're climbing over rocks.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks for your call. Tony, do you have thoughts?
No. Congratulations on making it to the top, Leslie.
That is something. We are going to take another short break, but first, a look ahead at tomorrow's program. The National Book Award finalists were announced today. Tomorrow, we will speak with the executive director of the National Book Foundation about the nominations and about American literature today. Which were your favorite books of the year so far? Email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. In the meantime, if you'd like to ask a question of Dan and Danny, who are back from hiking the AT, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Collins Center for the Arts, with Aquila Theater's live production of Hamlet, a Shakespeare classic. October 12th, CollinsCenterForTheArts.com.
This is Alec Baldwin, host of Here's the Thing from WNYC.
You just seem so, what's the word? I mean, you're so...
Jewish.
Bringing you an all-new season of real conversations with inspiring people.
Is that it? I'll convert if it's that simple.
Here's the Thing starts Sunday evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio. Join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Today's episode, part one on climate change denial. Public intellectual Clive Hamilton says we've entered a new geological age brought on by human-induced climate change. That's on Ideas from the CBC this afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today in the program, Hiking the AT. Joining me in the studio today, Tony Barrett, who serves on the executive committee of the Maine Appalachian Trail Club and as a trail maintainer. Danny Moody and Dan Jaguer are also with us. They recently completed Hiking the AT. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Marlene. I was Danny Moody's high school math teacher and advisor. Just wanted to let him know how proud I am for this great achievement. Danny was a good student and a joy to be around. It is nice to see him grow into a mature and responsible adult and doing fun and adventurous activities. Congratulations, Danny Moody.
Thank you, Miss Lauritsen. That was my advisor.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. So, email from Albert. Did you see any wind farms? If so, did you think they hurt the view? Or did you think that's great that they're generating clean energy? Or what?
You were able to see a few. There was none like too close to the trail. Me personally, I lean towards it. At least it's a clean, renewable resource. I'd rather kind of see that in the skyline than a bunch of smokestacks billowing smoke. But I'm sure other people find them as to be a bit obtrusive and prefer like the natural landscape.
Danny, what'd you think?
I'm a little bitter about them, but not for any reason other than it's just kind of I got to look at it. So I don't really have any personal views on them.
And this is a big debate going on in the conservation and environmental community, isn't it, Tony?
It is. The Maine Appalachian Trail Club has a stated policy where they support renewable energy and wind energy. And the issue is just the proper siting of these facilities. The Nature Conservancy has come out and said that if we move ahead for reaching our country's renewable energy goals, 20% of our open space could be consumed by industrial energy development. So it's kind of getting that balance. So
we have an email from Mark. How many pairs of hiking boots did you go through?
I went through 4 pairs myself. Hike like trail runner style shoes, less like hiking boots, more trail runners.
I did the same. Well, mine was like 3.5. So I did 3 full pair. And then my 4th pair, instead of like going out, because it was only for the 100-mile wilderness, instead of going out and buying a brand new pair, I just used some that I had from my house, like some old hiking shoes I had. So I just hiked the rest of the 100-mile wilderness in those.
We'll go to Joan, who's calling from Mount Desert. Hi, Joan. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I'm the grandmother of Superfly, who walked from Georgia to Katahdin from early March and got to Katahdin on August 11th, and it was great to welcome him and some of his hiking friends, 2 young men from Aberdeen, Scotland, and 1 from Georgia, and 1 from Charlottesville, Virginia. And I thought the boys might like to talk about trail magic and what it is and how they experienced it, because it's such a great support for the hikers along the way.
Yes, trail magic is definitely like what makes the AT how special. Trail magic can be anything from like a simple can of soda on the side of a trail to someone happens to have a grill set up and they're cooking food for you. And it'll just a random act of kindness and someone will be there. There is one of the more notable guys is there's a man called the Omelet Guy right at the entrance to the White Mountains. And he has a nice whole thing set up and he'll cook you any number of egg omelet and feed it to you right there. So which is amazing.
The record is 30. Yeah. He told us that the record's 30, and the guy had to take the day off and sleep right there because he couldn't move.
Because he ate a 30-egg omelet,
and he made it for him. If you tell him how many eggs you want, he does not care. He will make it.
So what kind of omelet did you have, Danny?
I had the plain Jane. If you don't ask for anything specific, he just makes a bunch and kind of dishes it out.
What about you, Dan?
Mine was like only 4 or 5. I split like a 10-egg with somebody, but he puts like ham and vegetables to it, and he has coffee and juice there for you. It's just like a small act of kindness, but it can literally turn your day around. Like even just a simple can of soda, you could be having the worst day you've had on the trail, and you come to a road crossing, and there's a can of soda or an orange even, and you'd be surprised how much it can turn your day around and make you change your mood.
So that's fun to know. If you know of where a place where the Appalachian Trail crosses a road, put something fun there, and you know that you've become part of the magic.
Yeah, you don't even have to stand there. A lot of people just, like, if it's near their house, set a cooler on the trail with a little note and a little bag to, like, put cans in. And, like, even that right there is just great.
Do you remember any of that, Tony?
Yes. I mean, it's been going on, and maybe it's even increasing in popularity. And even though it's best intentioned, especially the large hiker feeds and the unintended food can have some unintended consequences, though, too, because of animals' health, compaction on the site. It takes away from the experience, too. I mean, there's trail magic provided by the volunteers to go out and clear the trail, too. So
be thoughtful if you're going to do something like right. that. And like he said,
it's just like some sodas and
recycling.
Some waters.
Yeah, yeah. So Joan, thanks so much for your call. I want to go to an email from a guy named Skip Moody. He says, ask about Danny's fun with the dog he met.
So in Port Clinton, Pennsylvania, I got attacked by a Rottweiler and I got 10 stitches in my right arm.
It just happened to be like a random town dog that was on too much leash.
That's my dad, by the way.
Yes, I figured.
And the dog just must have not been friendly. Yeah. And there was no way to know.
I woke up in the morning at a pavilion that's provided by the town, and I wanted to walk across the street to go swimming because it was really, really hot this day. And there was a dog over there tied up, big Rottweiler. And I wasn't really that close to him because I wasn't in the mood to figure out if it was a friendly dog or not, so I gave it its space, but come to find out the dog had like 40 feet of rope to run on, and the owner had tied him up and walked to the store. So the dog starts coming at me, so I turned and run, and just as like he was getting towards the end of his leash, he just caught my arm and cut me open a little.
Talk about characters on the trail, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, no, well, I'm sorry about that. I'm glad you're okay. Yikes. We're going to go to Diane, who's calling from Porter. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to be a trail angel next year, and I was wondering if you had any advice, things you'd like to eat, that kind of thing. I heard some advice already.
Soda chips are like the base for something. Like, I'm not a real soda drinker in the real world, but when I'm on the trail, like a Coca-Cola is the sweetest thing you can put. Like,
just some sweets or even fruits really nice, too, because that's not something you're ever going to carry on the trail, but even like just fruits and some snacks is just something to like give you a little extra calories and a little boost in the middle of the day as you're hiking is great. It doesn't have to be anything fancy.
Even hot dogs. If you just put a little grill out, cook some hot dogs, that'd blow people's mind.
Yeah, but if you don't want to get that fancy, just some snacks and some sodas is all it takes to turn someone's day around.
And if you go to AppalachianTrail.org, there is a page for trail angels to give you advice on what hikers would like.
It's so funny you're naming hot dogs, chips, sodas. So this is not the place where you're doing the health food.
No, God, no.
It definitely would be very hard to stay. There are people who eat very healthy on the trail, but it's definitely more of a challenge just with carrying lengths of food and just trying to get in the amount of calories you need to consume to keep yourself going every day.
Did you guys both lose weight on the trail?
Yes, I lost 40 pounds.
40
lost
pounds?
25 pounds.
Wow, and you're still just eating everything you could.
Yeah, I had a large pizza and a 2-liter for lunch one day. Large pizza and a 2-liter, just ate the whole thing and then walked and we camped, and you don't even notice a difference. You're just walking so much.
You could eat more than you ever could believe every hour of your
starving. Like a hollow leg.
Yeah.
Diane, thanks for your call. We'll go to Bremen and Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you can hear me, and I hope you can, one of the things I always wanted to do was hike the Appalachian Trail and didn't have that opportunity, and may not. But my friends and I talk a lot about when you're hiking alone, the disappearances on the trail. Did that affect any of your decision to strike off on your own as far as hiking?
No, not at all.
I would definitely say that those, although they do happen, I would say it's very rare. I feel like that everyone, I could almost trust everyone I met almost immediately. Everyone's like a huge family. We're all going through the same struggles every single day. I was never worried for my safety at all.
And the trail's so well marked. I mean, it's really pretty tough to get lost on it.
Yeah, there'll be stretches that are unmarked. Maine, for instance, was very well marked. Lots of blazes and like signs saying this direction will be this far and this is a blue blaze and that'll bring you there. There was a few places where sometimes you'd have a hard time finding a white blaze, but Maine in particular was very well marked, and the trails were well maintained, and the bushes cut back. And of course, when you would see people out there working on them, you'd stop to say thank you, because those are the ones that are really doing the real trail magic. Because without them, you end up walking through brush, always brushing on your arms and grabbing at your pack. So the people that keep the trails maintained are the real angels.
Tony, tell me about it. Are you one of the people who has a certain section that you maintain? Where is that section, and what do you do to maintain it?
It's a 4.2-mile section between Sugarloaf and Saddleback Mountain. It's a pretty remote site to get into it. I have to walk a mile and a half just to get to the trail from my car. And you go up in the spring right after snow melts and clear trees that have blown down.
So you're going up with a chainsaw?
Typically, I go up with hand tools first and then make the trail passable and then go back with a chainsaw to get the big stuff out.
So you have to be in pretty good shape just to get to the trail with the tools to do the work to keep it open. Yeah.
And we also have a trail crew that is, this year we had 21 weeks of the main trail crew. We hire seasonal crew leaders, and then they will train, and every week we'll have 5 to 6 volunteers with each crew. So for people that want to be a trail angel and help out, they could join the trail crew, and they work on putting in rock steps and rock bars and some of the more complex structures on the trail.
Great, great. And we'll put information about that on our Facebook page. We have an email from Larkspur, whose AT name is Sweet Pea. I'm curious what the numbers are these days in terms of people who start a through hike and numbers who complete. When I through hiked in 97, I think the numbers were 2,200. I assume the numbers have increased on both counts. What do we know?
Right. For 2017, like I said, we don't know. We don't have exact numbers, but we measure in Georgia. We have a register there at Harper's Ferry, which is the conference headquarters, and then coming into Baxter State Park. So it looks like it's about people starting through hikes is about 4,000 this year. Back in those years, about 20 or 25% of people who started completed the trail. Last year, 36% who started completed the trail. So the success rate seems to be a little higher, and we think that's continuing for 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like about in the order of about 1,500 people will complete the trail this
Probably
year.
With information on the internet, people are better prepared, or more people are better prepared.
Yeah, and I think just gear-wise, I think you can get gear that makes it easier, and just with technology these days, I think it makes the trail easier than it was in the past.
Right. I think
I know for me in person, in Harper's Ferry, I was hiker number 1,438, and when I got to Katahdin, I was hiker number 638 to finish the trail.
So either you'd pass those people or they'd stopped.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I know on September 5th, at least 640 people had finished the AT. I'm sure the number went up just by the time Moody finished in late September.
I was 919.
919, wow, 919. Wow. An email from Stephen: when I was a student at Colby College, 1961 to 1965, the Colby Outing Club was responsible for maintaining the 85th to 100th mile of the trail from Chairback Gap Lean-To to Long Pond Street. Lean-To twice a year, once in September and when we returned to school, and in June we embarked on a long weekend trail clearing trip. Snow made the June clearing trips problematic, but the September weather gave us the chance to clear the blowdowns, which the snow hid from us in June. Like Thoreau, we went into the woods because we wanted to live deliberately and not discover when we had died that we had not lived, because living is so dear. The through hikers we met on the trail clearing weekends were so complimentary of our efforts to keep the trail passable, it made it all worthwhile. That's nice, Stephen. So we have just a couple minutes left. I want to ask you guys what you're doing now. You had jobs before you left. You going back to those jobs? Going to do something different? What about you, Dan?
I've went back to work a little bit for the same company. Definitely not full time or anything. Trying to keep things flexible at the moment. You definitely, when you get home, you're kind of restless, and it, I think it helped me kind of get back into real life to get to work and just keep myself busy, so I'm not spending so much time sitting around or just filling my time of the day.
I'm still enjoying my time off right now. My time back with Daisy, kind of doing nothing. So. I'm going to be making some moves towards kind of the next step in my life pretty soon here.
All right. And how did it change your life, Tony, to do a through hike?
It really opened my eyes about nature. I think I really appreciate being out in the woods a lot more. And, you know, we're so blessed to be here in Maine with such easy access to some great places. So,
was it transformational? Did you have a different kind of life and career before it and a different kind after, or just a different change in perspective?
It's probably more a change in perspective, yeah. But it was a pivot point for me in my life. It wasn't, so I probably focused more on giving back on the trail, and land conservation has been an interest of mine ever since.
So in our final moments, what advice do you have for somebody who might be thinking about it next year?
I would definitely say go for it. Don't set yourself, set yourself a goal of finishing, but if you don't make it all the way, it's not anything terrible. You can always go back and finish it. And it's definitely just keep your focus one day ahead. One thing I will note that's kind of like just a fun fact, my feet started at a size 10.5, and I think I grew all the way to 11.5, and that happens to almost everyone on the trail, that your feet grow almost a full size, if half size to a full size, on the trail, and I think everyone has just found that a pretty cool fact.
Danny, what kind of advice do you have?
I would kind of play onto that, just kind of go for it, you know what I mean? The only way to really do it is to just do it, but the biggest thing is know what you're getting yourself into. Don't underestimate the trail, because you see people out there every day that are just like, what did I get myself into? So you got to kind of know what is going to happen. So research it, get online, go out, try some, you know, in a couple day backpacking trip. And make sure you save enough money. You see a lot of people dropping off the trail, not because they want to, but because they thought they could do it for cheaper, and they're trying to skimp by, and then they run out of money.
Well, thank you guys both for being here, and congratulations. Danny Moody and Dan Jaguer recently completed hiking the Appalachian Trail. And Tony Barrett's here, too. He's on the executive committee of the Maine Appalachian Trail Club and helps to maintain the trail. Roddy Nick Poor ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.